The Histories, Part 1, The Coincidence.
On the 4th of August, 1909, a woman named Martha Pankhurst was clearing up the house after a big evening meal with her family. She lived by Mink Cove, a scattering of houses on Digby Neck in Nova Scotia. Through the window above the kitchen sink, she could just make out the lights in the town of Weymouth over the bay. As she was washing the dishes at about 9:30 p.m., there was a flash of electric blue light which caused her to look up from her work. The sky behind Weymouth was lit with a bright turquoise light, and in a few seconds the room was shaking. She held onto the sides of the sink, transfixed by what she saw. Her husband, David, ran into the room, asking what was going on. By way of reply, she pointed out of the window. A loud rumble could now be heard, getting louder and louder, and they both looked on at the strange sky. This phenomenon was witnessed by only a few people. In New Tuscott, south of Weymouth, a pig breeder saw the same light in the sky, still behind Weymouth. A girl in Barton to the north saw the very same thing. All eyewitness accounts place the centre of the strange light at Weymouth. However, no one in that town saw anything strange in the sky at all. They did, however, have to deal with a fire that started near the centre of town at close to midnight. This burnt down quite a few buildings, including two churches. The Lantern Grange, a refrigerated steam cargo ship, spent the 4th of August 1909 traversing the Irish Sea. En route from Glasgow, its intended destination was Newport in Wales. Captain Graves ran a crew of 53 after dropping his pilot off at Greenock. The ship was running in ballast, ready for its next cargo pickup in Newport. At around 1:30 a.m., the captain saw that a heading adjustment was needed. They had spotted Stumblehead Lighthouse for a moment, but a fog descended over the ship quite quickly, and a proper bearing could not be taken. An hour later, the Lantern Grange struck an underground rock and became stranded. It took over 4 days for the ship to finally break in two and sink beneath the waves. All those on the ship's roster were saved. Captain Graves was found to be at fault and was censured. Others among the crew, though, felt that there was more to the story. David Gimmel, an engineer on the crew, writes this to his fiancée in Bristol.
Dearest Abigail, I'm stuck in Newport for a few days while they carry out the investigation. Still getting over the shock of it. It was a grim night, that's for sure. They are bound to be blaming the captain, and by all accounts, he made some errors there. But something else was going on. One of the holds was off limits during that stretch from Glasgow. Someone was inside it, though. We could hear them banging and clattering around. And the fog that overcame us dropped down like a ton of bricks. Something conspired against us, that's for sure. Something unnatural.
The ship's records from that day show no cargo or passengers en route from Glasgow to Newport. Twenty-eight-year-old Georges-Henri Duchemont was a Parisian pork butcher. He was skilled at his job, but preferred to live off his mother's paltry salary. Unsurprisingly, she eventually refused his request for money. Georges responded by murdering her and stealing what little money was in her possession. When asked about the murder, Georges said,
"I asked her to give me a 50-franc note, which I knew she possessed. She said, no, you shall have no more money from me. Then I went into a passion, seized my mother, who was only partly dressed, and determined to strangle her. In 5 minutes, she fell to the floor. But she was not dead, and was groaning. So I took out my knife and cut her throat."
Georges was sentenced to death, and early in the morning of the 5th of August 1909, crowds began to gather around La Santé prison. Paris had not seen the fall of a guillotine blade in over 10 years, and the event was a special occasion for the public. Because of the public interest in the execution, little was made of the deaths of some 20 people in the crowd. The throng down a nearby side street suddenly rushed towards the main roads, having no thought to those poor souls who they were trampling on. Louise Béranger later wrote to her mother about the occurrence.
"I was so scared, terrified. I was just walking along towards the prison with my friend Florette. There was shouting from behind us, and we turned to see the ground opening up. A great blackness was there, in the middle of the street. And then this thing climbed out. It was death. It had to be death. Coming for that mother killer. We ran. We went mad and we ran."
In the Flatiron District of Manhattan, New York, the Masonic Hall occupies the entire end of a block, between 23rd and 24th Street. Apart from an ornate golden doorway and some stained glass, it otherwise looks like a run-of-the-mill office building. On August the 4th, 1909, this was the venue for a talk by the infamous president of the Theosophical Society, Mrs. Annie Besant. Her subject was reincarnation. Despite the heavy rain, the Masonic Hall was packed with damp postulants, eager to hear Besant's ideas. The New York Times reported on the proceedings, indicating that to make her points about reincarnation, orthodoxy, and science clear, Mrs. Besant took the cases of children born and brought up under different circumstances.
"Here, is a baby, dead after a few hours of life. Orthodox churches say he's gone to heaven. But is that fair to those of us who have to grow up, meet temptation, perhaps fall and go to hell? The first soul got to heaven without any effort. The second is damned, even though it may have done pretty stout fighting. Here is a slum child, and it is born under such conditions that it's practically doomed to end life a criminal, and to go to hell, according to Orthodox churches. But here is a genius, born in a good body, surrounded by careful guardians and teachers, coaxed into virtue, dying an honourable death with good works piled up behind, and going to heaven. But is this fair to the slum child? It is not. The slum child had no chance.
At the time, reincarnation was a largely unknown theory in the West, especially amongst the masses. Besant painted a picture of an ever-upward struggle, life after life, with innumerable chances for betterment. In the audience was one Arthur Legg Phillips, recently arrived from London. He listened with great interest, rising at the end to applaud. He then walked briskly towards an area which should have been off limits. He found the stairs that led down to the basement area and made his way to the farthest corner, where the electric lights did not reach. It took just over a year for his body to be found. A rat catcher had been hired by the hall, and during his search of the basement, the desiccated remains of Legg Phillips were found. He had, apparently, died face down, positioned within a large circle. Four incidents, seemingly unconnected, except that they apparently happened at exactly the same time. It would take one man's tenacity, and over 2 years of travel and research, to link these four events, and eventually many others too, to a small group of people that met regularly in London, England.
This is Al Ashworth, creator of the Strange Circle podcast. I really hope you enjoyed this episode and invite you to visit the Strange Circle website for more facts, stories and clues. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would be very grateful if you could rate and review, especially on iTunes. If you're feeling generous, please sponsor me on Patreon. This podcast is a labour of love, and any help you can give is gratefully received. You can find all the information at pod.strangecircle.org. Thanks for listening.